Hey there, and welcome back to another episode of Control-Alt-Azure. I'm Tobias. I'm back again with Yussi. What's up?
Hey, Tobias. It is the conference season, almost like back in the old days. And when I say old days, I perhaps mean, for me, 2011 to about 2019-ish. And I'm preparing about 5 talks now for the next 3 months. And all of those will be in-person sessions and breakouts and tutorials and workshops and whatnot with slightly different topics. So it's not one talk 5 times, it's 5 different individual talks. And I've realized now this is fun, but I'd also forgotten how much energy and focus preparing for this require. It's not just doing a bunch of PowerPoints in Copilot, because I don't really use Copilot for that. But the demos, the travel arrangements, checking if the hotel in the destination city has a gym, that's crucial for me. And ensuring I know where the speaker dinner is and how do I get there. And also that my family knows I'll be gone for a few days. I do like this more, though, than just doing virtual events, which I think we all did for a couple of years. So this is better, but this is also slightly more taxing.
Yeah, that's good reflections. I do miss going to conferences a little bit more than I do today. You know, the virtual events, we talked about that multiple times. There's a lot of benefits to those, but yeah, you often miss the kind of in-person, the personal connection with people and, you know, get to stand by the water cooler and just figure things out and listen to customers and their stories and their challenges and stuff like that. For me, what I've been up to lately is I've been on a couple of new hikes lately now that the weather is clearing up a little bit. You know, hiking the trails with good friends is a great way for me to kind of wind down from everyday and everyday work. And, you know, the cooking gear comes along. I sometimes do 3-course meals in the forest, which is amazing. So last weekend, I went on a 30-kilometer hike, give or take. That was pretty great, but I still feel it now in my body. Which tells me I'm not as used to doing the longer hikes with the heavy gear, especially with a heavy backpack. It wears on my shoulders a bit. So you would imagine that after such a long hike, the legs or your feet is the thing that hurts the most. But for me, it's the shoulders, because the shoulder straps of the backpack, even though I have the waist belt thing, that really weighs a lot. You know, typically because I bring a lot of food, I bring a lot of water. I bring a portable espresso coffee machine, obviously, that you need to have in the woods. So that's the price you have to pay if you want to have fancy dinner in the woods, a good cup of coffee, and you know, you just have to bring the quality gear. So that's what I've been up to. I've been, you know, picking out my old you know, hiking gear equipment and brushing that off, and went on a couple of hikes.
That sounds awesome. I tried suggesting to my youngest son, he turned 7 this year, I tried suggesting for tomorrow when we have the Easter holiday that we'd go hiking, like a fairly easy 6-kilometer hike, and then we do a bit of food in the forest and then hike back about 6 kilometers. He was like, Dad, no, let's go to the indoor water park. That's much more fun. So now we are going to the indoor water park. Today, we'll be diving into Azure AI Studio. And we've talked about AI a couple of times. In episode 199, we refreshed our knowledge on Azure AI. I recall we had some announcements back then. And in episode 220, we talked about when to use what with generative AI. And then in episode 223, we talked about understanding Azure AI Search, because it used to be called Azure Cognitive Search, and now it's Azure AI Search. So today we thought, let's focus on what brings this all together, a bit more technical, Azure AI Studio. So let's go through what you can do with this, a bit of our experiences in building our prototypes and projects with this one. And I do realize we've had a couple of episodes on AI now, but this also seems to be something that whichever workshop or meeting or project I attend, evidently or eventually, the discussion goes to AI somehow. So this is sort of perhaps closing the circle on the last big aspect of Microsoft AI capabilities as it relates to Azure. Toby, any top of mind thoughts on AI in general as of today or Azure AI?
That's a good question. I mean, AI, I think, is top of everyone's mind. And I think we've talked about this a couple of times now. And I always come back to when someone says, hey, we need AI, or I want to talk about AI, or let's talk about AI. I always ask them, what type of AI are you talking about? Because you have traditional classic AI, whatever you want to call it these days. And that's like the cognitive services in Azure, or, you know, Azure AI services. A lot of those services are what you might classify as traditional AI. And you have generative AI, which is more, you know, the GPT-powered type of AI. So I have a lot of thoughts on both types of AI, or even multiple types of AI. So for me, I think generative AI is that's where the discussion happens mostly today, because AI, we've had that for a long time. Azure machine learning has been around for quite some time as well, which is AI, or traditional AI, which now supports generative AI as well. So there's a lot of kind of angles to this. And I know we talked about this in a couple of our previous episodes. We had one about when to use what with generative AI, and we talked a little bit about Azure AI Studio there as well. So I'm excited to dive into this episode to hear your thoughts. I know you work a lot with these things. I've only kind of brushed the surface with Azure AI Studio. I've dabbled a little bit with it, tried it out. I've explored a couple of models, did some benchmarking on the models, and did a couple of deployments, and set up an API. I built a service around it, and I called my API and stuff like that. Pretty straightforward. But, you know, with some cost implications and whatever, we'll probably talk about that. Now, why would you use, the top of mind for me is, why would you use Azure AI Studio? Like, trying to understand the vast landscape of everything AI and everything AI on Azure. We have Copilot, Copilot Studio, we have Azure AI and Azure AI Studio, and we have a bunch of other tools as well to design and build AI solutions. So if we're talking about Azure AI Studio today, let's start with the why. Why Azure AI Studio? Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, that's a good question. And I've struggled a bit to somehow formulate a nice consultant answer that's not, it depends, because that's too easy nowadays. But for Azure AI Studio, I feel that is the platform that is currently evolving together with generative AI capabilities. So perhaps just as a brief recap, and I do realize we've mentioned this before in those previous episodes, but a brief recap on the main tools. So Copilot Studio is something you use for building intelligent bots. And this is mostly for the no-code, low-code approach. Nothing wrong with this. You can definitely use this. But I feel this is fairly close to building Power Automate-based automations and process flows. And if you need something more, perhaps not technical, but if you need to tweak things a little bit more, or if you're comfortable with code, then Copilot Studio, just like with Power Automate, you will resort to using something else. Maybe Logic Apps as opposed to Power Automate. And for Copilot Studio, we still have Azure OpenAI Studio. And I'm not sure if it's fair to say, but Azure OpenAI Studio, that's the old one. You provision the large language models in there. You can do fine-tuning. You can chat with the models to see how they work. But whenever you build a solution with Azure OpenAI Studio, you end up using the built-in REST APIs that Microsoft already has running. You point to your model and you add the parameters, but that's about it, plus the fine-tuning. It's less technical and it allows you to bring your own data fairly easily. It's a couple of clicks and you're done. So what I sort of also was hoping to get is something that allows me to dive deeper into the logic and deeper into utilizing the model. So instead of just, air quotes, just getting GPT 3.5 Turbo and GPT-4 and maybe a couple of the older models, I felt I need more. an Azure AI Studio, which is currently in preview. That's the latest and greatest, and we'll focus that on this episode. So this expands from the Azure Machine Learning Studio, which is still sort of hovering in the background. But Azure AI Studio allows you to build an end-to-end solution using generative AI, where you can tweak each bits and each step of your solution. So I would say for anybody starting to build generative AI solutions, you either choose Copilot Studio because you get up and running in 5 minutes, or if you're comfortable in building technical solutions, more technical than Copilot Studio allows you to do, then you go directly to Azure AI Studio and just skip Azure OpenAI Studio.
Okay. Yeah, I think that makes sense. So it's a good starting point using Azure AI Studio. If that expands also on Azure Machine Learning Studio that I tried in the past. Okay, that makes sense. And so what can you do in here? I remember when I took a look at this in the past, you had, you know, you could explore different models, you could model, do benchmarks on different models, and you can, you know, you had a prompt catalog where you can, you know, either use existing prompts or something like that, or you could kind of design your own, if I recall correctly. You could build and then manage your, so it was like explore, build, and manage. You could explore models and customize things. You could build stuff and deploy stuff, and then you could manage whatever you deployed. So taking a look at that for Azure AI Studio, what is it that we can do in here? Like, what are the key features or areas that you see we should focus on or understand when using Azure AI Studio?
So you have a couple of main capabilities in Azure AI Studio. And the first one is you can provision and choose your large language models, your LLMs. And as I said before, with Azure OpenAI Studio, the older studio, you typically had the OpenAI-based LLMs, GPT 3.5, 3.5 Turbo, GPT-4 with different token limitations, but that's about it. For now, with Azure AI Studio, it's more open. So you can provision LLMs that are not by Microsoft or not licensed directly from OpenAI. So there's hundreds of LLMs to choose from. And don't perhaps be too fixated on choosing one. What's stopping you from provisioning five models and combining those capabilities within your solutions for different use cases? So for example, for me, when I'm building a solution using Azure AI, using Azure AI Studio, I might gravitate to Meta's Llama 2, or the Mistral models, or Microsoft's Phi-2, which is the small language model, much faster, more lightweight, but super capable. So I don't just have to say GPT 3.5 Turbo or GPT-4. I have to choose between these two, and the cost is fairly fixed. I can now browse and select from those dozens and dozens of models. But this also brings you the challenge in, so what models do I choose then? Do I just go with the one everybody talks about, or do I experiment in trying to find a good fit for the model? But keep in mind that it's relatively easy to change the model later on. So you can start with something, then you can benchmark against a different model with the same setup in your project, and then commit to using one or the other later on. So I would say choosing and evaluating the LLMs within Azure AI Studio, that's probably the starting point where you get started. Toby, how is it for you? Are you, if you're building a solution, is it for you that you just go with GPT, some version, and call it a day? Or are you experimenting with non-Microsoft or non-OpenAI models?
Yeah, I was going to say that is the biggest question today, is, and we might require a full episode on that to bring some brain power into that. You know, why do you choose different models? How do you make that choice? And what differs the most popular models? And you know, what are the use cases for them? For me, I've built a couple of generative AI solutions. Most of the time, I am either using ChatGPT and the API, so the actual OpenAI REST API, or I've used an API for Azure OpenAI Service and built on that. And whatever model is behind ChatGPT, I don't know, I don't care. Like, I might know, but, you know, that's my attitude towards that. If it's something that says, well, I'm building a home assistant and I want to be able to talk with it and it needs to understand what I'm saying and it needs to convert that into a tangible task, or the other way around. I've got a bunch of tasks and I wanted to say, you know, break those tasks down and tell me in plain voice, what is it that you need to accomplish today based on the kind of home setup that I have. And so that's one of the solutions I've built, and I'm using ChatGPT for that. So I just plug into the REST API. At that point, I don't care what model is supporting that, because I know GPT and GPT-4, whatever I pass in, I'm going to get a great result every time it works. The times I've had to look into different models is if I have a very peculiar data set, or I might have you know, financial data that I need to run analysis on and export some kind of report on that, or a specific type of data, then it might be better to find a different model that better supports that type of analysis. But that's kind of the extent of my explorations with different LLMs or different models. And I think this is a question that a lot of folks have. I've had this question from multiple people saying, how do you choose the right model? And I just say, I don't know. Like, it depends on your use case. It depends on the capabilities you're looking for. What is the business case you're trying to support with the solution you're building? You know, as opposed to starting with the question, which model do I choose? You need to start asking yourself, what is the business goal? What is it you need to achieve with the solution? What is the requirements? Based on those requirements, you can easily map it to a model, as opposed to saying, what model do I need? Because if you ask that question and you don't know the variables of what you are trying to achieve, that's not an easy choice to make. And I do know that in Azure AI Studio, you can go to the Explore tab and you have the model catalog, and it's going to go through like Mistral Large, which is now available, Llama 2 APIs. You've got Azure OpenAI language models. You've got you know, all the different kind of Mistral editions, and Nemotron and Desai and Tjue, you know, all these random things. There's hundreds of things. Actually, there's 1,619 models right now. Coming back to, you need to understand what the requirement is for what you're building first. When you know that, you can more easily go in and make a decision. So for me, that's kind of where I lean in. And when I need to make those decisions, either I go ask someone who really knows, or I go in here to the model catalog in Azure AI Studio, and then you have a bunch of filters. And you can say, well, I only want things that's curated by Azure AI. And then you get only the models that Azure AI and the team really took a look at. And there's 119 of those. Or you can say, actually, the inference task that I'm looking for is conversational models, or it's text generation, or it's zero-shot classification, or it's speech recognition. Like, there's a model for everything. Text to image, or text summarization, text translation. There's a lot of different things. You can just filter on that and say, hey, I want conversational models, or you know, embeddings. We talked about that in a couple of episodes, or text generation. Then you select that filter and you'll get a list of models that supports and should understand how to do text generation. And that's also different from text summarization, which I know I've talked to a lot of folks on, like, I need something to just summarize what I have. Others are looking for something to generate new stuff. And that's a vast difference. Right, you have something that takes whatever you have and breaks it down and summarizes it, versus creating something entirely new. So all of these choices and variables, something you need to understand about what you're trying to achieve. When you know that, it's going to be easier to kind of build a model or choose the model. But without getting too long-winded on the selection of models, that's as far as my kind of experience goes. I've selected a couple models on that, but I will put a pin on that and say, let's make a full episode on choosing the right model and how to choose that model. So we get some, so we get coverage on that as well.
I like this thinking. For me, the main models beyond the GPT, the obvious candidates, the main models are Llama 2, Code Llama, the different Mistral variants, and Microsoft Phi 2. And depending a bit on what I'm building, I choose one of those and start building on that. And then maybe benchmark against a different model to see the differences. So you choose the LLMs in Azure AI Studio, and then you have a task that is two steps. You bring your custom data in, you configure how do I want to get my custom data in so that the LLM can somehow access that data? And then you need to index that custom data once it's within grasp, line of sight for Azure AI Studio. You will configure indexing, and the indexing is done with Azure AI Search by default. Obviously, you could use something else, but the built-in capability and the built-in sort of pipeline that you get is for Azure AI Search, which you can provision yourself, so you can select the SKU if you want to go with basic or standard. Let's talk a bit more on bringing your custom data in a bit with experiences, but typically you designate a predefined set of data, perhaps files or a database or something else, and you allocate that this is the data that I want to index. Then you run the indexing, and that might take anywhere from a minute up to hours, depending on how much data you have. And once you've done this, you've selected the LLM, you're allocated your custom data, you've indexed that data, meaning you have the tokens. The vectors for that, meaning the embeddings, which eventually will become the tokens you will be utilizing. Once you have this in place, then you get to the second last step, the fourth step, which is to create the prompt flow. And Toby, I recall we did talk about prompt engineering in one of the past episodes. That was more on how do we feel about the prompts and how do we feel about building those. And I would say now, with a little bit more experience on Azure AI Studio, is that the prompt flow, this is the real prompt engineering that you're building, as opposed to using copilots, having a text box, and you're asking stuff. Yes, those are prompts as well, but it's less about engineering. It's more about prompting. So prompt flow is more prompt engineering. Would this make sense for you?
I think it does. And I know there's a lot of discussions now on what is prompt engineering and what is it that you need to understand. And you know, I think there's different flavors of what is prompt engineering and what is a prompt and what is a prompt flow and all these things. So I think that makes sense. But I do like in Azure AI Studio that you have the prompts catalog. And similar to the model catalog that I just talked about before, saying you can go in and say, hey, I want a model that supports summarization or generation or whatever it is. You also have a prompt catalog. And in there, you can say, actually, there's a travel assistant. It already exists. It's about summarizing something. So I'm going to click that. And then you can pass in an image. You can take a photo, like you're at the airport. You take a photo of the screen that shows you all the flights, you know, what is delayed, what is not delayed, what times are they coming, the kind of arrivals and departures and which terminal, all this stuff. And the prompt would be, the system message would be, you're an AI assistant that helps people find information. And the starter message would be like, based on the flight information on this board, and here's the picture, can you provide specifics for my trip to Zurich or Stockholm or Copenhagen, whatever. And it's going to find that information and summarize that and give you that answer. So that's how, just to make it tangible, how Azure AI Studio can help you design stuff like that. That exists with the prompt catalog that exists. So the prompt flow is something you can design. Prompt flow is also something you can kind of inherit from the prompt catalog and say, hey, here's a starting point. This is what I want to start looking into. And then you can just open that in the playground, which means you're going to have to select an AI project you have or deploy an AI project, and then you can get that up and running and try it out. So I really like that. I think that's a good way to get started with AI without understanding or knowing all the things about this prompt flow, all the things about how this actually works. You don't have to do this ground up. Based on those existing examples that exist in there, you can pick one that is a close match or even a slightly remotely match to what you want to achieve. Select it, and then you get that into the to the playground, which does require you to have a deployment already, or you can create a deployment when you do that. So I really like that. But I, you know, semantics, prompt flow, prompt engineering, I think that is also something that's, you know, the perception of what a prompt flow is and what prompt engineering is, I think that will change as we mature into the generative AI landscape as well.
Yeah, agreed on that one. And the prompt flow interface within Azure AI Studio. It's fairly straightforward, but you can start building insanely complex prompt flows within your application. So the challenge that I've found here is that depending on what sort of a solution you're building, you have to design the prompt flow fairly carefully. Which LLMs will I be utilizing? Because you can have multiple here. They don't have to be the same. So perhaps you're getting input from a system or from a user, and then you're running that first through one LLM to summarize that. Then you're calling an external system, maybe Microsoft Graph, to get additional data based on that one. And then you're expanding with a different LLM based on that one. So you sort of design both visually and in code your flow, your end-to-end flow that your applications will eventually use. And you can tweak the number of tokens for output here, the parameters. You can add custom code. Python is the only thing that is supported for now. I hope somebody will see the lights at the product group level, and they will add C# here as well, but Python for now. And if you don't like the graphical interface, you can also see raw files. I'm not entirely sure. To me, the raw file looks like YAML that we all love to not love. But typically, the graphical designer brings good results in my experience. And the last bit, once you're happy with the prompt flow, and you can test it in here, you can speed up a runtime and keep testing it. Once you're happy with that, the last step, the fifth step in Azure AI Studio is to deploy your solution as a REST API. And for this, you're provisioning compute capacity. And the difference now between Azure OpenAI Studio, the older version, and Azure AI Studio is that when in Azure AI Studio, when you deploy this solution as a REST API, you will provision compute capacity that builds a custom REST API for you that will wrap the queries and run those through your custom prompt flow, call the LLMs that you choose. So in essence, you're inferencing in the cloud without needing to do all the plumbing yourself, because Azure AI Studio will build those connections between your custom data, between your index, between your prompt flow, all the way to the REST API and authentication and authorization, everything else. So this sort of is the big picture with Azure AI Studio.
Yeah, I really like this. So I think one thing, like the very first question I had was why Azure AI Studio? And we talked a little bit how it differs from Copilot Studio, Azure OpenAI Studio, and then Azure AI Studio, which is what we're talking about now. We talked about what we can do in here. We talked about the experiences in using it. All of these things are really good lessons learned. So do we have any real world use cases? Like, what would you build here? Not how you would build it. We know that model catalog and the prompt catalog, all these things will support us. We can deploy stuff. We can build, can manage it. We have the playground. We can test it out. We get an API. We can work with that. That's all good, but that's the how. What about the why? Do we know customers, or do you know customers? Have you seen in the wild what people are now building using this? Because I know in our previous episode where we talked about when to use what with generative AI, that was, I think, episode 220. We said that it's going to be exciting to hear what customers are actually building using any of these solutions now, and we're moving fast forward into the generative AI landscape. So I'm pretty sure customers are building some fantastic stuff. Do you have any stories on that end?
I do have plenty of stories, and perhaps the key lesson that I've learned here before we sort of dive deeper into the exacts here, the key lesson for me has been that when I'm involved in a project and the sort of thinking goes that, okay, let's go for generative AI. We need something that GPT-4 as is cannot give us. And when we start down this road of using Azure AI Studio, meaning indexing the data, bringing the data in, doing the prompt flows, doing the deployments, everything in between, is that people often realize that, okay, I thought the end result is a bit like Copilot. We just, you know, flip a switch, apply a license, and now we have this magic Gen AI thingy. And this reminds me that last night I read a news that Databricks, the company, that they've released a commercial LLM that they are sharing with the world that seems fairly capable. They sort of boast that in certs and benchmarks it exceeds GPT-4, which is great. And they casually mentioned that they spent about $10 million on training the model. So people often forget that when you're building these fairly advanced solutions, it's not just a flip of the switch and then you start using something. You're actually building a real solution. So building something with Azure AI Studio and integrating that result into your overall project, because here you're just building one API or multiple APIs. You still need to build everything else, the interface, the logic, everything else somehow. It takes time. So my experience here on what the requests are that businesses are perhaps looking into building has been that they have custom data, perhaps hundreds of PDF files or markdown files or Word documents or text files or large databases. They want to index that and use that as grounding data for something else. Maybe it's a customer-facing chatbot that knows everything about the company's products or the customer's requests or previous interactions. Or maybe it's something related to security incidents and alerts. When we are getting an incident, instead of somebody manually sifting through those findings, let's train a custom API with existing incidents that we have and then start automatically suggesting the remediations and the solutions, even up to the end user using this. So it's all about automating with intelligence using existing data. I would say that's the hope and wish everybody wants to build with Azure AI Studio now.
All right. Yeah, I think that makes sense. I think this is good coverage. I think the one thing that I want to just end with, and a note from my end, is I did take this for a spin. I know we talked about this in a previous episode where we said, hey, we're going to take this for a spin. I did take it for a spin. And just be aware of the cost of deploying these models. So I deployed, I think, 3 different models. And the models and the things you deploy are supported by virtual machines. I had a bill of $350 for the NC12S version 3 virtual machine that I deployed because I wanted to try something out, and I did, and it was really quick. It was working really well. But something happened. My kids interrupted, so I need to go into the family. And then I forgot I deployed these things, and they ran for a bit, maybe a couple of days or something like that. And then the bill just went up to almost $400. Be careful with whatever you deploy, look at the pricing. You're going to be able to use cost analysis within Azure portal to see, the actual cost. But make sure you kind of do your calculations on the cost before you deploy something. And if you do deploy it, make sure you either have something to shut it down or you shut it down yourself if it's just, a playground. If you're building something for production, then obviously you do all the things you always do for your production workloads. You go through cost management, cost calculations, estimates, you do all these things, you put budgets and restrictions in place. I didn't do that because my subscription has a limit in itself. So whenever it reaches the limit, it just shuts the subscription down. So I had, that's my safeguard, and that's what happened. But I could still see that the bill went up to $400, but it was shut down after $150 or something like that for that one subscription. So I think that is something to keep in mind. Just the container registry that was deployed cost $60, which is quite a lot for a container registry. I've had large container registries, and they usually don't cost a lot. So just be aware of the cost of the actual resources you deploy and the supporting resources. And supporting resources can be things like a load balancer, virtual networks, and things like that. That's usually not a lot of dollars. But then you have storage accounts where the price could go up a little bit. But then you have the container registries, which I didn't expect to cost that much, but it did. So that's also something to be aware of. But obviously the computational price is where the money is at. So the VMs you deploy to support this, that's where you have to pay. So I think that for me, that's the lesson learned, is be more careful with what you deploy, even in the playground. Make sure you have budgets in place for your Azure subscription. If it's an MSDN subscription or something like that with a pre-allocated set of credits that will just cancel when it runs out, that is a safeguard, of course, but it's boring if that happens, because if you do have something running there that you rely on, that's going to be unusable until you either get new credits the next month or you start paying for it. So be careful, take a look at the price, take a look at what things cost, and just follow that closely.
That's solid advice for deployment, and especially for cost of deployment. I'm sort of hoping that in the future, Azure AI Studio would allow me to more freely decide where I want to deploy my custom REST API. For now, you deploy on compute capacity, meaning virtual machines. And the typical cost for this is between 10 cents to $2 per hour. But keep in mind that it is 730 hours per month. So if you're deploying on more beefy compute capacity, $2 per hour times 730, that's about $1,500 to run your singular custom REST API. So obviously you cannot just go there and do next deploy and forget about it. You have to design and you have to scope the capacity properly. If you go for the cheapest ones, then inferencing will be slower. So even if you have a relatively simple REST API, you do a request against the API, and then it takes you 5 to 12 seconds to get the response. It's simply too slow at times because nobody wants to wait if it's an interactive capability. But if it's part of an automation that runs in the background, nobody cares if it takes 30 seconds or not. So plan ahead. It's fun to build these fancy, amazing AI solutions, but you need to plan ahead, like with any technical deployment, any technical project. What will be the building blocks? How do you interact with this? What will be the cost? How do you secure, how do you maintain all of this?
Yeah, these are some good reflections. I think I've exhausted the kind of angles I wanted to understand here. Anything else on your end?
No, that's about it. And I know we can talk about this in the future, but for now, we've sort of covered everything in generative AI in the few past episodes and this one. The last bit would be the unexpected question. And this time, Toby, I think it's your turn to ask me.
Okay. So again, something I've contemplated now for a week since the last episode, something I'm wondering about is, if you could replace all the grass in the world with something else, what would it be?
Okay. This is tough. I do like grass, and I know I have a project coming in about 4 weeks from now when the snow is finally melted away that we need to put grass on the yard. If I couldn't do that, and if it had to be something else, I'm inclined to say snow, because I get to experience snow 6 months a year, sometimes seven, depending on how the year is. And this winter especially has been fairly harsh. So I don't really like snow, but I'm okay with that one. But something I did consider back in the day when we built our summer cabin, we considered stone ash. And I was like, oh, okay, this is fairly okay. Not the whole yard, though, but it's nicer than gravel and sand. So I would opt for snow and stone ash. Sort of like divide the areas between these two options.
Wow. I just imagine like Central Park, you know, all the grass is just now stone gravel and snow and stone ash. Might be great. Who knows?
Yeah, that would be awesome. That would be awesome. Alrighty. Thanks for tuning in. See you next week.
All right. See you then.